morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, November 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan's military leader names new members of the Transitional Council.
The newly appointed Transitional Council is headed by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and deputized by the commander of the Sudan paramilitary leader, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo.
An explosive device wounds 12 students at Cameroon University. The Polisario Front says the UN must ensure a referendum in Western Sahara. Namibian descendants in Botswana push for German genocide compensation. And Boeing accepts responsibility for the March 2019 737 MAX crash in Ethiopia.
They have accepted, they have admitted that indeed there was a manufacturer's defect on the aircraft, and that defect is actually what caused the crash.
And a look at Senegal's political landscape ahead of that country's local election. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's posts are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudan's military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has appointed new members of a transitional council to be led by him. This comes as members of the Forces for Freedom and Change are planning yet another protest this Saturday. The group had demanded a restoration of the old transitional council led by Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok. Meanwhile, the internet service, which a judge earlier this week ordered restored, has yet to be turned back on. Journalist Michael Atit in the Sudanese capital Khartoum says the new transitional council includes three members of the armed groups that joined the old council following the Juba peace agreement.
The newly appointed transitional council is headed by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and deputized by the commander of the Sudan paramilitary leader, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. And then three other members who are Shamsuddin Kabashi and Yasser Abdurrahman Hassan Al-Atta and Mohandis Ibrahim Jabir. The five members that I've mentioned them were initially in the previous council as well.
Who are the civilian members of this new council? What happened to the former prime minister, Mr. Hamdok?
Besides the five military members of the Sovereign Council, there are three members of what so-called Sudanese Revolutionary Front who are members of armed group that have signed the Juba peace deal with the Sudanese government. Talk of Malik Agar, who is the leader of Sudan People's Liberation Movement North. Talk of Attahir Hajar and Al-Hadi Idris. These are three members of the Sudanese Revolutionary Front who have been reappointed in this council. There is a neutral member, according to the previous constitutional document, who is a female. She's called Raja Nicola Abdul Masih. This should be the only Christian in the council. The new faces on board are Yusuf Jad Karim, and then Abdul Ghassi Muhammad Ahmad, and then Abdul Baghi Abdul Gadir, and another female new face, who is Salma Abdeljabbar al-Mubarak.
The Forces for Freedom and Change had said that they will not accept a transitional council headed by the military. Is there any reaction from them about this new council?
Even though there are no official statements being issued by members of the Forces for Freedom and Change, definitely this is not a good news for them. And maybe today or tomorrow we might see statement of condemnation that they are not part of this new council that has been formed to lead Sudan in the coming days. There has been news about suggestion of Hamdok being appointed in the council, but it appears that they might have reached to a roadblock of appointing, or maybe Hamdok himself accepting to be appointed as member of the Sovereign Council so far. So it is still unknown.
A court had ruled that the internet should be restored. Has that happened?
Up to this moment, the internet is still off. It has not been restored. And maybe this might be also a precaution to a weekend protest that is planned to happen across Sudan Saturday. So this might also be a precaution from the military leaders in Sudan that should not be restored until maybe when this protest is organized and done.
Michael, thank you for joining us on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for hosting me.
That was journalist Michael Atit in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Aircraft manufacturer Boeing has accepted sole liability of the March 2019 737 MAX crash in Ethiopia that killed 157 people. In a statement on Wednesday, Boeing said it is committed to ensuring that all families who lost loved ones in the accident are fully and fairly compensated. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, lawyers for the families have described the agreement as an important step towards justice.
According to the legal documents filed on Wednesday in a Chicago court, Boeing admitted liability for the accident that happened in Ethiopia in March 2019, claiming 157 lives. The documents, however, do not mention specific amounts to be paid out to the families of the victims. Lawyers representing the victims noted in a statement that Boeing admitted under the agreement that the 737 MAX had an unsafe condition and that it will not attempt to blame anyone else for the crash. Laban Opande is one of the lawyers representing families of the victims.
So in this case, Boeing has been, of course, denying that they were not liable, that there was nothing defectful or there was nothing wrong with the aircraft that caused the accident to happen. And so that has been a main big bone of contention, because it's kind of hard to move to the next phase, which is usually the compensation, unless the airline had admitted that they were liable. So they have accepted, they have admitted that indeed there was a manufacturer's defect on the aircraft, and that defect is actually what caused the crash.
The compensation is a milestone for the families in their pursuit of justice against Boeing, as it will ensure the families are all treated equitably and eligible to recover full damages under the American law. The compensation serves to hold Boeing fully accountable for the deaths of 157 people. Ibrahim Hamed lost his son in the ill-fated plane. He spoke to Citizen TV Kenya saying it is better when the matter is solved on time in order to save his family from court visits.
He was working with Al Marai in Saudi Arabia, where he used to supervise in a farm. You see, he had that post. It is better we settle this matter on time so that we stop making trips to courts. Our loved ones are not there anymore. No matter what we get, it can't help us get them back to life.
Lawyer Opande says some families had already settled the matter out of court before Boeing admitted liability.
Some families had been in discussions with the airline and they had agreed to settle out of court. So as a matter of fact, quite a number of families have been in discussions with the aircraft carrier, with Boeing, to settle out of court. And so that has happened even prior to this admission of liability. But for those who have settled, it has been more of, you know, just wanting to move on and, you know, bring some kind of closure to this ordeal that they have had for the last 2 years or so.
Boeing's 737 MAX plane was grounded for 20 months after 346 people died in two different 737 MAX crashes, one in Indonesia in 2018 and another one in Ethiopia in 2019. The plane returned to service after Boeing made significant software and training improvements. The crashes already have cost Boeing about $20 billion. Next week, Tuesday, a judge has set a hearing on the compensation agreement. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Thousands of people in Botswana whose ancestors came from Namibia are demanding reparations for genocide that they say was committed by German forces more than a century ago. Namibia is negotiating with the German government, but the descendants say they have been left out of the talks. Umkundise Dube reports from Habaroni, Botswana.
In the early 1900s, German colonizers in Namibia killed thousands of people from three tribes, the Ova Herero, Ova Banderu, and Nama, for taking part in an uprising. There are no official figures of how many people were killed. Some of the Ova Herero, Ova Banderu and Nama later settled in Botswana and their descendants live there today. This week, Botswana's Minister of Presidential Affairs, Gabo Moroeng, told Parliament that Botswana has been facilitating dialogue between the Namibian government and the affected groups.
Botswana of Namibian descent, who have approached government of Botswana for assistance on the issue of repatriations for the genocide, where while their specific numbers are unknown as they are represented by a committee, are accordingly receiving assistance arranged by Botswana under the process that has been established by the government of Namibia for a negotiated settlement.
Moroeng added, Botswana cannot do anything more than facilitate dialogue because the issue involves sovereign states, Namibia and the Federal Republic of Germany. But legislator Kata Higuama, who represents some of the affected descendants in parliament, is unhappy with the Botswana government.
We need their facilitation. We need their support. We are not expecting the government of Botswana to negotiate on behalf of these dissidents. We want the government of Botswana to facilitate the negotiations and allow these people to access the German government.
Edwin Saidu is the vice chairperson of the Botswana Society of the Nama, Ova Mbanderu and Ova Herero tribes. He says the group is displeased.
Let me be very frank with that, with regards to the government of Namibia, in no unambiguous terms, we have not had any assistance from the government of Namibia, save a suggestion that was made in one sitting where we had been promised or we thought that we will be given a chance to be part of the negotiation table as those who are in the diaspora.
He urges the Namibian government to open up talks to include affected communities.
Our expectation is only for the government of Namibia to open up the talks instead of making them a bilateral negotiation between it and the government of the Federal Republic of Germany. The talks need to be approached, in our view, from a multinational view, and therefore include and encompass all the nations and states that hold the diaspora who are also from the affected communities.
In May of this year, Germany officially apologized to Namibia for the killings and has promised development aid worth $1.2 billion as part of the compensation to the affected communities. However, some descendants of the victims in both Namibia and Botswana are angry at the offer, which has been described as an insult by traditional leaders because it does not include payments for reparations. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 12. About a dozen students were injured when police say someone set off an explosive device at a university in Western Cameroon. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack, but the government blames separatist groups. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé that the government is pleading with frightened students to return to class.
Horace Ngomomanga, the vice chancellor of the University of Boya, says an IED exploded at the school's amphitheater on Wednesday evening. Boya is an English-speaking town in Cameroon's southwest region. Government troops and separatists have been fighting each other in the region since 2017. Manga says about a dozen students were wounded in the explosion.
Somebody we are yet to identify through some device, which is yet to be identified also, on the roof of Amphi 600, and it released some metal particles. So far, we have one male student and 11 female students at the Solidarity Clinic, where they are following up treatment. The students are being carried one by one for x-rays for further investigation into the depth of their injury.
No one has claimed responsibility for the attack, but Cameroon's military blames separatist fighters. The military says that last month, the separatists warned all schools and universities in Boya to seal their doors, but gave no further explanation. On Thursday, less than 2,000 of the 14,000 students enrolled at the university showed up for class. Southwest Region Governor Bernard Okalia-Bilai urged everyone to return, saying the military has been deployed to protect students and staff members. He said education is crucial to the country's future and must be allowed to continue without interruption.
President Prubia attaches a lot of importance to education, and therefore we must continue to denounce those who try to disturb the good functioning of the schools.
Bilai says students should not be intimidated by the explosion. He said the wounded who were rushed to a hospital in Boya will be treated free of charge. However, some on campus are uneasy after the explosion. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The Polisario Front says a statement by Morocco's King Mohammed VI that Western Sahara is not negotiable is unacceptable. The group, recognized by the United Nations as the legitimate representative of the Sahrawi people, says the King's statement undermines efforts to ensure peace, stability, and respect for human rights in the Western Sahara. The King's statement comes after the UN Security Council extended the mandate of the UN mission for a year until October 31st, 2022. Ambassador Moulu Sahi is the representative of the Polisario Front in Washington, D.C. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the international community must ensure that a referendum for the people of Western Sahara to determine their future is non-negotiable.
I am sure that the Kingdom of Morocco, they know very well how to turn the page on this conflict. The short way and the shortcut is for Morocco to respect the international legality and to put an end to its illegal occupation of the Western Sahara, the occupation of a member state of the African Union. So these, the Moroccans, they have not changed their position. They continue with the same intransigence and same challenging the international law. And so nothing is new on this statement by the foreign minister of Morocco.
Ambassador Said, what is your reaction to Morocco's stance that it has a legitimate right to Western Sahara, which it says it's a sovereign part of the country and will not relinquish it, although it is disputed and although Western Sahara, Polisario Front to be specific, is against it? But what is your reaction to Moroccan stance so far, according to the foreign minister's statement?
How can the foreign minister of Morocco speak about respecting territorial integrity when Morocco itself is annexing a part of a territory which belongs to a member state of the African Union? The problem is not Algeria. The problem is the Moroccan occupation of the Western Sahara, the occupation of a member state of the African Union. And this is the position of Algeria, is the same position that Algeria had supporting Namibia, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, South Africa, East Timor, and so on. So this is a position of principle that Algeria has taken in support of the people's rights of determination, which completely opposite to the Moroccan policy of annexing territories and expanding its borders illegally in violation of international law.
So what's your reaction to King Mohammed VI, the Moroccan king's statement that Western Sahara is non-negotiable? Morocco will not negotiate it away.
This is exactly a repeat of previous statements by the king, but he should know also that the right of the people's self-determination and freedom is not negotiable, and that the Sahrawis will continue their struggle until they realize their rights and impose the respect of the international legality, in particular the right of people's self-determination and freedom.
Ambassador Moulu Sahi is the representative of the Polisario Front in Washington, D.C. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty. The list of candidates for Senegal's local elections in January next year have been approved or denied. One of the biggest announcements was that President Macky Sall's opponent during the last presidential election, Ousmane Sonko, will run for mayor of Senegal's second city, Zinguinchor. The move signals his intention to build support before the presidential election in 2024, despite the fact that he was charged with rape earlier this year. Ibrahim Kan, head of African Union and ECOWAS advocate at the Open Society Institute of West Africa, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the current political landscape surrounding Sonko.
for this election, this is the first attempt after the presidential election. This is the first attempt by Sonko to really show to the Senegalese population that he's popular, that he has, clouds, and that he's capable of not taking over the power in 2024, but at least being able to shake the baobab. You know, for me, I see his attempt to compete in Ziguinchor as the first attempt to be elected.
Do you view this as more of a move toward continuing his presidential bid?
This is just, in my view, apart from what I just said, it's also an opportunity for him to show that Casamance is in his pocket. And if you have Casamance in your pocket, it's quite very useful for you when 2024 comes and you have, because 2024 will also allow, I think, Khalifa Sall coming in the election.
Do you think this could position Casamance as, in general, as somewhere that maybe would be more of the national discussion when it comes time for presidential elections then? Especially because Sonko is so much in the national eye, in the national media already.
Yes, but you know, even if you are in the national eye, in the national media, you need to have a stronghold, you know, and Sonko doesn't have any stronghold. And I think what he wants to show is that what happened during the last presidential election was not just a small event. It was a trend. Now he wants to confirm that trend by having a stronghold in Casamance.
I think one of the biggest economic questions anyway when it comes to Senegal and development questions is the offshore oil. Are there any candidates who are running who have a really differing view on this issue as in regards to the oil?
Well, when you look at we are very far from 2024. It's 2020. We are 2021. And I think the politicians have not yet determined what will be their own strategy and how do they engage the government on a number of issues. But from what I know, for example, somebody like Khalifa Sall is not really talking about the oil issue, talking about many other points like the mismanagement of the national resources, all these issues, the economic situation of the country and other stuff, rather than talking about the oil and other stuff. Because many of them are of the view that this oil, nobody knows when it will be, we will start exploiting it. And also, when you look at the recent days and weeks, there are many, many doubts about investment, a lot of investment on fossil energy. And that's also, I think, put the Senegal strategy, Macky Sall strategy, not in doubt, but in question.
That was Ibrahim Akan, head of African Union and ECOWAS Advocacy at the Open Society Institute of West Africa. You are speaking with Ricky Stryak from Dakar. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with results of matches played in the 2022 World Cup qualifiers on Thursday at the FNB Stadium in Soweto, South Africa. At the FNB Stadium in Johannesburg, Tebogo Mokoena's 26th-minute goal handed South Africa a precious 1-0 victory over Zimbabwe as the Bafana Bafana inch closer to the playoff round of the qualifiers for the Qatar 2022 FIFA World Cup. Elsewhere, Senegal left it late before scoring an additional time equalizer to play out to a 1-1 draw with Togo and remain unbeaten in the group round. Senegal faced Congo-Brazzaville in their last match on Sunday, while Togo will be away to Namibia. Staying with football news, Kenya police on Thursday evening cordoned off Football Kenya Federation's Kakanda House headquarters at the Kasarani area hours after the government disbanded the sports body.
FKF President Nick Mwenwa vowed to oppose the takeover of the federation by a caretaker committee named by Cabinet Sports Secretary Amina Mohammed on Wednesday. He also called on all stakeholders, including footballers, referees and coaches, not to take orders from the new committee, which is chaired by retired Justice Aaron Ringera. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, November 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.